Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the next episode of Women's Wisdom Through the Ages. I'm really pleased today to have Anjali here. And Anjali, can you please tell me, how do I pronounce your family name?
So my family name is pronounced as Natarajan.
Natarajan.
Yes,
that's awesome. Yeah. Awesome. So Anjali Natarajan. And she's just an amazing young lady. But just before I introduce her, I just want to share a little bit. It might be your first time listening to the podcast. So I'll just go back through. And one of the reasons I've called it Women's Wisdom Through the Ages is because people, I find women and everybody at different ages thinks a little bit differently. So, for example, I've just come into my 50s. And Anjali, I think you're in your 20s.
Early 20s,
yep. So there's quite a big age gap there. And so I find that as we're talking with people from different ages, that we can come up with different solutions. That just as if I'm speaking with someone who's in their 70s or 80s, they've obviously been around a bit longer and been through different times especially, and even been through maybe they were born just after World War II. You know, so that would be, or even during World War II. And then someone coming in, you know, like you'd be a digital native as compared to somebody who's like a, what we call a digital immigrant. So things like that would be quite different. So my thinking is that over time, that just speaking to inspirational women, and that by looking at coming from the different age brackets that we're in, that we'll be able to look at different solutions for society issues. Okay, and you'll notice that especially something that happens with age, your eyesight changes. So I'm going to have to go up and down with that. So just thank you for your patience with that, and that's why I'm doing that. So I'm just going to tell you a little bit about Anjali. She is a final year Bachelor of Law student and Bachelor of Arts in International Relations student at Macquarie University, and she's doing a fascinating honours thesis at the moment. And her experiences range across law, policy, media, and education. And I mean, that sounds crazy for someone in their early 20s to be doing that. But because I've, you know, met Anjali a few times now, at even her level of what she's knowing at that, it's quite astounding, even if she was 40, to be having that much experience. So it's just, she is an inspirational young lady. She's also written for a range of publications, such as the Australian Spectator, Daily Telegraph, Quadrant, and the Herald Sun. Her other interests include foreign affairs issues, politics, public policy, history, and foreign languages. And yeah, so welcome. Thank you so much for coming along today.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me on here.
Wonderful. And so I thought today it would be really helpful because obviously we're in lockdown. We're not in traditional offices, as you can see by our backgrounds. And so the first thing I want to talk about is, how is lockdown affecting you specifically and even maybe some other people your age?
So I think lockdown for me specifically has been a bit difficult. I've very much missed the social element of being able to go out to university, to go out with friends. I have been finding it's good to be actually at home with family, and it's been more flexible in terms of my day. I can schedule it according to my needs and do what I need to do. But I think the inability to go to university is the hardest. I think more broadly in terms of how it affects young people and how other people my age are dealing with it, again, it's the social isolation. We're all going through very collective, shared sort of experience of being self-isolated. But I think one of the issues is mental health. A lot of young people are very much used to going out, being very active, playing sports, and now all of these capacities are restrained because of the public health threat that COVID-19 presents. I think also a lot of young people my age are impacted by the job market, because many of us are in junior positions or junior roles, so we're more likely to be laid off, more likely to have our employment suffer because of a result of us just being in those junior positions. So many of us are at the moment at home, unemployed, or trying to just get by with university at the moment. So that can be very difficult. It can mean it's very hard to remain productive as well. And it's also the issue of what is going to happen once we get out of this crisis. For many young people, there's a sense of uncertainty and mm-hmm. unpredictability because they don't know, when are we going to graduate? Are we going to have to delay that? Are we going to have to miss job opportunities or delay the ability to start a new career, for example?
Yes, absolutely. And so, and you mentioned the mental health aspect. So yeah. specifically what might that look like? Or what have you seen with maybe friends, or you've heard from friends your age?
I think it's the difficulty in being able to balance remaining mentally strong with the uncertainty. I think mm-hmm. much of the uncertainty is actually causing the stress among people, the social isolation. And I think that could be minimized if, for example, the government was to provide people with more hope and a clearer picture of exactly how long we're going to be in this situation. When will these laws be repealed? For example, the government is telling us that, we're doing very well, that the numbers are flatlining in terms of cases for COVID-19, yet they're not really mm-hmm. telling us, are they going to be exercising the public health order and public mm-hmm. gatherings till June, or if it will be repealed earlier. And similarly, there's inconsistent advice among federal and state governments about when that's going to happen. For example, recently the state government said, we might not be able to go out or really enjoy our freedoms until a vaccine is discovered. So I think these mm-hmm. have a direct impact on the mental health of young people. But fortunately, because a lot of young people are still at universities and they have those circles and their connections, they're able mm-hmm. to still engage in webinars. And I know, for example, my law school runs a few mental health well-being classes and yoga mm-hmm. and things like that, just to maintain strong mentality during this very difficult and challenging time.
Yeah. And I mean, you brought up so many different ideas, especially mental health, but obviously exercise. I'm just so relieved we're in Australia at the moment, and even in New South Wales, because obviously we're both in Sydney. I've got really close people to me who have been in New Zealand on lockdown level 4. So that's been much more intense, and like we've still been able to go out for walks and, even buy a coffee, like maybe we've gone to the chemist or something and we can pop by and grab a coffee on the way back or something. So from that point of view, it's been wonderful. And this is what I was saying before about with people of different ages. For me, what I'm seeing, especially with young people, it's like when you're older, you've had your dreams broken. You've had your hopes shattered already once or twice. And so you know that you can get past it. But even then, oh my gosh, I know I've been struggling in certain aspects, and so have other friends of mine who are younger or older or similar age. And sometimes that might be, not being able to see family members or, not being able to travel, especially when you live in different places. Not being able, I had a girlfriend on Facebook who finally was able to see her grandmother in a nursing home. Oh, wow. And so, things like that. So, and I think even just the connection, especially if you've got people who are single, maybe not living with their families, that you don't even have that physical touch. You can't even go up and give your friends a hug, whereas at least if you're with family or something, you've got that. And one thing you mentioned, and it's interesting because with the job market, from what I've seen, especially, for example, if you're looking at McDonald's, obviously in Australia, McDonald's is still going. And one thing I was doing a while ago, which I have fallen off now with my coaching and author page on Facebook, I was trying to do like positives every day and just an observation of something that was really good that was happening, and one of them was that even in McDonald's, that there's the new staff that they're bringing on who are obviously very young are getting extra training that normally when they've been so busy it's just so crazy. So, that was a positive that I noticed. But also even Woolworths, whether it be trolley people or cleaners or people on the trains, or from that point of view, it can be people who are unskilled. It can be people who are really young. So it's interesting that you're saying that you feel like the younger people are more impacted, whereas I would have thought maybe it was the other way around. People who are more skilled are losing their jobs more or... But it's just been fascinating. Like I'm around people like who have lost their jobs, but I'm also around people who have just been are so much more in demand. And especially if people are in mining, for example, or even financial services, they're just getting so much busier. So, again, it's just like the different ages and the people you're around, which is why I'm so grateful that you said yes to come on today so we can discuss it. Have you ever been in any situations like this before?
I don't believe so, no. I think this is the fact that our entire lifestyle is being upended is something very new for myself and many young people as well.
Yeah. It's interesting. If you live overseas and if you've been in different places, like for me it wasn't that unusual because I've lived in East Timor, I've lived in Indonesia, I've been there when we've had the, you know, the Asian economic crash, you know, the Asian, what do they call it, monetary crisis. Back in 97, 98. And so that led to political instabilities. And so people were, you know, we did have lockdown and then, you know, different situations. But I know for most Australians, it is the first time. But what is so different this time, it's almost like a world war situation where everybody in the world is impacted.
Exactly.
So from that point of
view. Very unique, actually, in that, you know, in all kinds of everyone is, you know, at some extent faced depression or self-isolation, but this is one where everyone is facing it and going through that shared and collective experience.
Yes, absolutely. And you mentioned before about the government should be doing more and to give hope. So I'm interested to talk about that one more. What do you think that the, you know, do you think it's good? What, the, you know, like say, for example, the New South Wales state or the Australian federal government, have you, what things do you think they've done well and maybe what things do you, from your opinion, do you think maybe they could be better?
I think that this is a very difficult situation to manage, and it's very easy to criticise the government at one point to say, well, you know, they could be doing more, they could be more competent. Mm-hmm. I think certainly they've done a good job in ensuring that the numbers in Australia haven't proliferated to the extent that it has in, say, the US or Europe. So I think that's a commendable effort. I think there is still a lot of things, though, that the government is missing in their response. One of them, which I raised, was the discomfort in that we are all facing this time of crisis because of our civil liberties being curtailed. And I think particularly it's the fact that the government needs to provide the public with more of it, of details of what the lockdown exit strategy is going to look like, so that people actually have a sense of hope and know that this isn't some indefinite time in our lives that we are going to be living. For example, I think that they need to better balance, you know, the mental, physical and psychological damage caused by prolonged isolation with the suffering and loss of COVID-19 itself. Because while, yes, COVID-19 is a highly infectious disease and has affected large numbers of the population, there is going to be a lot more psychological damage that could be minimized if the government started to give people hope. And in this case, for example, many people my age as well as older saying perhaps the cure is actually worse than the disease because of the fact the stripping away of what makes life so enjoyable, going out and being with others and interacting, could actually kill far more people than the virus itself. Yeah. But I also think that in other aspects, the government should maybe exercise more proportionality. Because over the last few weeks, we've seen examples of disproportionate police power. The public health order of COVID-19 restrictions on gathering and movement have been widely interpreted by states. And this has resulted in police exercising perhaps far too much discretion in certain circumstances to award and fines and patrol suburbs. So I think that there needs to be greater consideration that we need to manage that, especially given the fact that the numbers are flatlining. It seems a bit disproportionate to still be imposing such draconian laws to that extent. And I think there needs to also be more uniformity and consistency among government, because there's been a lot of confusion, I'm sure, as you've seen in the news, because of the lack of consistency between state and federal advice, particularly in relation to whether children should be able to go to school or not. So I think that's extremely important. And I think that it's very important for the government, again, to recognize that there is going to be a prevalence of crime and alcoholism and even domestic violence if we stay in this current course. So they need to really be soon relaxing these restrictions, because people can deal with discomfort for a short amount of time, but they can't for long periods of time. It's just human nature not to be locked up like this. So certainly we need to be seeing more of the government providing clarity, I think, in this particular time.
Yeah. You mentioned a lot of things there. So I just want to go back in and So, you know, talking about the civil liberties, I can just think of a couple, like someone was fined for doing a driving lesson, or, you know, there's just different ones that have been coming up on Facebook. And, you know, I understand that. And I think there were some other things, and it may have even been some of the podcasts that you've been on through the, is it viral banter with the Generation Liberty?
That's correct. Yeah,
which has been fantastic. I really enjoyed the one where you have, is it your the general manager of?
Yes.
I've forgotten her name.
Renee Gorman.
Renee Gorman, and there was four of you that came on, yes. And that was it Luca, Boston, you, and Laura. Yeah, that was fabulous. Really good, and just to hear so many different points of view, and even different universities have different sort of political biases in a way, I suppose, of how you move forward, and you know, even where the lecturers sit, and how that might impact you, just like you said, the difference between the state and the federal. And what I've been so pleased about being in New South Wales, and I think the government's done an amazing job, because how on earth do you try and balance? So how do you balance like the economy, the economic impact, you know, with you know, like you said, the short-term health impact with COVID-19. And it's amazing how it's been able to be, the numbers have been able to be, you know, kept down. But then, like you said, the increase in homelessness, the domestic violence. I was on a long Zoom call last night, and it was on the domestic violence and just horrendous stats. And I mean, they were saying that the stats weren't necessarily up so much at the moment, but some of the stats that they brought up, if I remember correctly, were 20% of domestic violence only is reported. But that the police attend domestic violence incidents like every 2 minutes or something. Oh, and every 9 days in Australia, a woman dies as a result of domestic violence, you know, whether it be a current or a former intimate partner. And then one man dies every 29 days for the same reason. And it's just horrendous. Yeah, so there's just so many different aspects, and I agree with you. It's like, how do you balance the short term with the long term? And just with that, do you have anyone, and I'll come back to the exit strategy in a minute, do you think there's any world leader at the moment that you think is doing a pretty good job of talking about an exit strategy?
Not that I can think of at the top of my head. I think at the moment, a lot of countries are still in the thick of things with coronavirus and how they're going to manage it. I have heard some good things coming from South Korea and their ability to have control the situation. They have barely any new cases now. I'm not entirely knowledgeable exactly what their exit strategy does look like, but it certainly looks like they're doing a much better job than a lot of other nations at the moment.
Okay. And I follow the US politics quite a bit. And I think Donald Trump has fantastic exit strategies, but then from the alternate side, he gets criticised a lot because he's not taking it seriously. So again, when you're in politics, it's always like, how, you know, you're always going to have so many people against you no matter what you do. So I really love the fact, for example, that, you know, Gladys Berejiklian, is that how you pronounce your family name?
Berejiklian, I believe so.
Okay. Yep. And sorry, Gladys, if you're listening. I'm quite new to New South Wales. I only came down from November last year. And she's doing a fabulous job. Like, she's doing a media update every morning. And then we've got Prime Minister Morrison, who's doing updates regularly, and there's different other politicians, which I think, again, in such a difficult time, I think they've really risen to the challenge. I think part of the inconsistency is even Liberal states versus Labor states. For example, Victoria is under a Labor government, and they've just announced that the schools won't even open all term, which is so different compared to New South Wales. We go back to school next week. And we've been told, I think it's one day a week to go back to school, if I've got that correct. So it's like each state is quite different. And I think a big part of that is which political party. But even that, I've just been astounded with how well the different political leaders have been coming together. because there's been a core group of all of the, obviously with the Chief Medical Officer, with our Prime Minister and all the Premiers and others that are meeting all the time about this. So from my point of view, that's like the best they've got on with probably ever, which I think you know, other countries could learn from that of how well. And then there's countries, for example, like New Zealand, they don't have states. So it's quite different again. So you can't really compare apples and oranges if you haven't got the same sort of system. You also mentioned, talking about the restriction of civil liberties.
Yes.
And one of the things that I noticed from watching the GenLib COVID forum and just saying, well, maybe why isn't there more of a public outcry of the loss of civil liberties? What would you, you know, what do you think about that?
I think, first of all, a lot of people are recognising that there is a public health threat and they don't obviously want to in any way cause like worse in that situation. It certainly is strange because we see in the US, for example, in Washington, we see many individuals who are protesting the stay-at-home orders to limit the spread of coronavirus, are defying the ban on gatherings in order to do so. And we don't see that in Australia. So I think that there has certainly been less fight back and friction more recently, I think because the government has been very diligent in consistently putting out a message that it's unsafe to go out unless it's for essential reasons. But it is interesting because Australia does have this culture of civil disobedience, and it's in our popular culture to sort of mock government and sort of be very anti-government. But I think in this particular case, we might have seen more acts of fight back or friction more earlier on in maybe March when there were lots of calls of people flouting restrictions. But now I think it's certainly it's suddenly stabilized a lot more. So it's quite surprising to see that there isn't that fight back of friction, but I think it's because perhaps it's the values of our society that we do also place a greater we believe in, you know, protecting the lives of others over, say, public wealth and the economy in these particular circumstances.
Yeah, and I would say just pulling together, and even because the politicians have been pulling together, that in itself, and I don't know, did you see the broadcast from Queen Elizabeth? And she talked about pulling together. Did you see that one?
Yes.
Yeah. And I heard, I think it was Boston on the, you know, the GenLib COVID-19 forum. And just saying, like, the ABC didn't even publicise it, or the different media outlets didn't even publicise it. But I just felt that that was amazing because it's, again, it's about pulling together. Exactly. And at this stage, you know, we do have the common enemy, and the common enemy, obviously, is the COVID-19. So I think that from a positive, because a lot of people concentrate on the negative, but I think just concentrating on the positive makes such a difference. And that in itself, I think, brings hope. So if we can try and, you know, help with that. Okay, we've talked about that. Now, tell us about what is Generation Liberty and how do you characterise liberty? What is it to you?
Yeah, absolutely. So Generation Liberty is a grassroots organisation. It's the youth chapter of the Institute of Public Affairs. Mm-hmm. And essentially they look to promoting ideas of like liberty, such as free speech, the rule of law, to younger people, and to kind of encourage more intellectual discussion and debate among younger groups, particularly university students. They're very much also focused on increasing the debate on campuses, because what has happened on our university campuses is a greater leaning to the left, and there's not enough of a more critical discussion from both sides of politics within the campus. So what they're trying to do is to encourage students to be more questionable of the ideas within our society and the contest of them within our culture. So how I would characterize liberty is that I view liberty as, or freedom, as like a natural right. I sort of take from maybe John Locke in saying that we should be allowed to do what we want so long as it doesn't hurt others. And I think that a society that's respectful of freedom of thought and expression provides a basis for individual happiness. And I also think that it's important, like part of freedom is about tolerating others and not restricting their actions or behaviors just because one of them finds it offensive or disapproving. And I think that's key to forming mutual respect. So For example, the basis for a peaceful society and a flourishing society is to value things like religious freedoms, to value political parties and free speech, which are really essential to a well-functioning community.
Awesome. And it's interesting. Why do you think that the universities have gone to the left and that there's the free speech has come down?
Yeah, it's a difficult question, but I think it's essentially to do with academics and sort of the agendas of academics. And a lot of them have various research interests. They tend to be more on the progressive. So I think it comes from those values as well. And I also think that has sort of led to a trend, because a lot of students in general tend to be more left-leaning rather than right-leaning on campuses generally. So there's a greater strength in their cause and support on campus. And that's why you see used in academia, because as a humanities student, a lot of academic literature is about considering new perspectives, postmodern perspectives, feminist, post-colonial, and that tends to feed into sort of more leftist agendas, identity politics, and so forth.
And it's interesting. I would say probably that's been a move in universities maybe for the last 30 years. Yes. And so there's been generations of people coming out that have been going that way. Which basically, for those of you who are not aware, the left and the right, the left I would characterize, and just see if you see it differently to me, because obviously you've probably got more, you know, especially university education background in those areas. But the left to me is more about having more government involvement, having much bigger government, the government looking after, for example, your education, your health, all of those things. But together with that, the government get to decide. Whereas I would say the right is about more about the individual having more freedoms. So the freedom of religion, freedom of worship, freedom of enterprise, those things. So it's like reducing the level of government, because we should be, you know, we should be responsible in ourselves, and the government should be a tool of the people, not be like a father figure that's making all the decisions for you, as an example. Oh, would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would say so, yes.
Yeah. And that's not being disrespectful. I think there's people that are on both sides who are awesome and who come up with wonderful ideas. But I would love to see people coming together with both of those ideas. And especially from, I find also with the left, it's quite often it's more emotional in the arguing, whereas on the right, it's more logical. That's whereas right. I think we would do a lot better to say, hey, I feel your pain. I understand it. Yes, I cry too.
That's right.
But that's if we get stuck in the helplessness and want the government to answer our problems, we're not empowering ourselves. Exactly. And so if we want to be changing the world, it's got to start with us. And then we need to be part of the government, or we need to be using the processes that are in place, because we know it's the government and the lawmakers. So it's exciting that you're doing law, because we need people who, especially who think outside the mainstream, you know, so that there's different perspectives. And years ago, there was that healthy debate, which is just wonderful. And obviously, just on that, the media I've found, the mainstream media, in Australia as well as overseas, has sort of shut down a lot of the debate. If you know, there's certain, I won't mention names, but there's certain programs, especially on the ABC, SBS and Channel 10 and Channel 7 and Channel 9, that they've got the compares, or that the hosts of that they just have such a point of view. And I don't think people even realise sometimes that they have such a strong point of view, where they have shut down other people. Because if you're always around those people, you don't know that you've got a different point of view.
Mainstream, I think that's the issue. It's become so mainstream, and issues such as political correctness have invaded our systems, our education systems, which means that any sort of thought or critique out of that circle, you get demonized for it.
Yes. And also, I mean, I know probably a lot of people watching this would probably know a lot more than me, but just if you're looking at YouTube, if you're looking at Facebook, all of the I can't think of the words, logarithms, that they're all giving you what you want. They're giving you more and more and more of what you're looking for. So it's like your particular point of view gets confirmed all the time, all the time. So I'm quite fortunate. I don't watch a lot of media. I do scroll through, like, say, for example, Google News or different things, but I don't have the images come up so much because I find they can be quite disturbing and just keep you off track, that it's sort of on fear. Whereas for me, it's got to be about, like you said, it's about hope, about mental health. How can we be offering an alternative point of view? And that's not to say that the mainstream is wrong always and different points of view, but it's just, like, to me, it's got to be weighed up, that there's got to be both sides of the debate and not just one side just shut down as if you're all crazy or you're all this particular way. Because I find when you talk to people, people are people, and people are just passionate. And I think most people are coming from a genuine heart, but they maybe have not considered other priorities. So I think that's what is commendable about the government at the moment. And when I say the government, I mean Liberal and Labor premiers working together, combined. Obviously, it's a Liberal government at the moment, but I think them working together has just been amazing. But obviously, you know, the inconsistencies are a bit interesting. Now, I don't know how long we've gone on for, because this is my very first time hosting a Zoom meeting. So thank you for being the guinea pig. Just to lighten things up a little bit, who has someone that you have found inspiring during lockdown, and how have you followed them?
I think rather than a specific person, I found the random acts of kindness of fellow Australians to be inspiring. I think in a time of uncertainty and chaos, you know, it's very easy to succumb to greed and selfishness. But we've seen a very generous human spirit within our population. We've seen people donating to our, like, donating coffee to health workers, or chocolates to teachers, or even cooking meals for neighbours and the elderly, or shopping for the elderly. So I think it's really revealing the country's sort of long treasured values of friendship and mateship and compassion and generosity that still flourishes in tough times. I think that's been quite an inspiration to me.
Yeah, wonderful. And what has been your favourite lockdown food?
Oh, it's very difficult to decide. I would say almond butter. So it's like a sort of like almond spread, because it's just, it's excellent in everything. Honestly, you could eat it with fruit, eat it on its own. It's nutritious. It's
I'll have to have a look at it, because I quite like almonds, but delicious. I have never heard of that before.
You love almonds? Well, almond butter is the way to go.
Awesome. And what is your favorite book that you have read during lockdown?
I read a book called The Five People You Meet in Heaven by Mitch Albom. He's the best-selling author of another book, Tuesdays with Maury. And I think it's a very philosophical novel that explores sort of the unexpected connections in our lives. It's essentially about a protagonist who awakens in the afterlife after suffering a fatal accident and kind of realizes that there are five people who are meant to sort of help him realize his true purpose in life, the meaningfulness, the connectedness of his life, and other themes like sacrifice and love and other things like that. So it's an extremely wonderful novel. I would definitely recommend it.
And it's called The Five People You Meet in Heaven?
That's right.
Okay, awesome. Because I have read Tuesdays with Maury and I loved it. So that's awesome. I will definitely look out for that. And the reason I asked you about your favourite book is because in one of your other podcasts, I heard that you're a real bookworm.
Yes.
So, and I'm aware there's other people listening to the podcast that maybe are not so much into reading. So thank you so much for joining with me today. And I think there's just so much that that the viewers will be able to connect with. And also hopefully there's been some things that maybe are a little bit enlightening for people. It's like, oh, wow, I hadn't thought about that, or just looking at it from different generations. So I really appreciate you coming on. And if you would like to just hang on while I just stop the recording and... Yeah, so thank you so much. If you're still listening, I'm not sure how long this video has taken today, but so my name's Catherine Jay. You've been listening to Women's Wisdom Through the Ages, and we hope to see you in the next podcast or the next video cast. Thank you so much for joining. Really appreciate it.